Today I want to talk about your fear of environmental signals and the fact that they are shaping your life. Your life is made of environmental signals and your response to them. That means if you and I continue our exposure to the same types of environmental signals that we've had in the past, and we maintain our type of responses to those environmental signals, our lives are largely going to be the same as they have been up to this point. However, if your life and my life is not the way we want it to be, all we have to do is these two things. Change the signals we expose ourselves to, and elevate our reactions and responses to those signals. So let's start at the beginning. Define this term. What is an environmental signal? An environmental signal to me is an energy movement that is perceptible to our five senses or more. Commonly, you'd think of an environmental signal as something that we're going to perceive through sight, hearing, touch, smell, taste, and or higher senses, intuition perhaps, simple cognition. In the case of sight, pretty easy to understand that the environmental signal is light, L-I-G-H-T. In the case of hearing, the environmental signal is a sound wave. In the case of touch, it might be the density, the level of frequency, or the movement of that energy. You know, if it's a rough surface or if it's the wind blowing, we would be able to perceive it through our sense of touch. In the case of taste and smell, certain structures in the mouth or the nose make perception of certain molecular structures and configurations possible. That's why we can perceive a taste, salt, spicy, sweet, and so on, as well as be able to smell different aromas, because we have the structures necessary. And each one of those situations, not just smell and taste, the body is equipped to process those signals through the nervous system. So capturing the environmental signal through the eyes, ears, nose, mouth, skin, and hair indicates our capability to receive the environmental signal. Receiving and perceiving are just the beginning of processing of environmental signals. This reminds me of a story when I was 8 years old and I just started playing organized baseball. I had a coach, his name was Joe. Coach Joe would repeat this command to us throughout the practice and throughout the game. Before each pitch, know what you will do if you catch the ball. If the ball comes to you, what are you going to do with it? You need to know the answer before the ball comes to you. I think Joe had good advice. It's analogous to what you and I have to do and decide hundreds of times, if not thousands of times, every day. What are we going to do with the environmental signals that we receive? What are we going to do with these signals that come to us? Those questions highlight our power or our weakness, how we translate and give meaning to those environmental signals. If we imagine them to be positive, they will almost always be positive. If we imagine them to be negative, they will almost always be negative. And if we anticipate that they will be positive, we're going to be open and eager. Kind of like a kid on a baseball field can't wait for that ball to come to him because he knows he's going to be able to receive that ball. He knows he's going to be able to process it effectively. He knows he's going to be able to tag somebody out or throw the ball to the appropriate person to make an out. On the other hand, and I saw this on the playground field with other kids, if we anticipate the future environmental signals coming to us that they're going to be negative or hurtful, we're going to resist or fight or run away from them. I know there were kids on the Little League field that were praying silently, sometimes aloud, hoping the ball didn't come to them, didn't want to take the chance on making a mistake, didn't want to take a chance on messing it up, didn't want to take a chance on mishandling this environmental signal. Bruce Lipton talks about the growth mode and the self-protect mode. So if we imagine environmental signals to be positive, we will mostly stay open in the growth mode. But if we imagine them to be negative, we will go into the self-protect mode. In this imagined state, we will anticipate criticism, emotional, or physical attack. We will think in terms of pain and discomfort. And it is when our perceptual filters are tuned to anticipate threats, that is, criticism, emotional, physical attack, wrongdoing, we tend first to fear these threats, and then we experience the environmental signals. And if we've attracted more to us because of our fear, which is very common, and sometimes we don't, and then we determine after the fact, oh, that wasn't a threat after all. However, we would have suffered the pain of that anticipation. And that's the real trouble. The real trouble is that an imagined threat to prepare for the worst so we won't be shocked has the same energetic and physiological effect that an actual threat does. Imagining a saber-toothed tiger in our lives causes the same impact on our bodies and our minds as a real saber-toothed tiger would have. For those of us who've been hurt by verbal comments, that's got to be everybody, and emotional abuse, probably everybody, physical and sexual abuse, way too many people, physical attacks, probably everybody, and so on, we are automatically sensitized and recalibrated to fear and look for the same threats in our current experiences. So if we had any of those kind of pain and abusive experiences when we were 5, we could be 45, 55, 65, 85, 105, and if we haven't healed them, we could still be anticipating them. And fearing danger prevents our fullest expression of our talents, because we're going to be trying to hold on to what we have. We're going to try to protect the energy that we currently have, and in some cases where we feel as though we have an opportunity to maybe dominate the threat, we're going to be willing to fight it. But in both of those scenarios, holding on and closing down and fighting, very little, if any, of our own energies or talents are going to be devoted to constructive or creative or meaningful activities that are designed to bring into physical manifestation the things we really want to experience in life. If we consider that the idea that energy exchange experiences will cause effects on us physically, emotionally, mentally, and or spiritually, we can understand a lot more about life and how we live life. We want to avoid pain. We want to feel happy. We want to feel good. We want to get pleasure. We want comfort. We want convenience. And we know on every single level that we need energy to live. We need energy to grow. We need energy to be healthy. We need energy to be happy, successful, comfortable. And we need energy in order to have the conveniences. That means we have to acquire energy. And we have to prevent its unwanted loss. So we have to reach out for it and bring it to us, or allow it to come to us. And we have to prevent it being taken from us. Our judgment and our capacity for memory are designed to help us survive and to do just that, acquire energy and prevent unwanted loss of energy. If we can remember the circumstances of pain, we can more effectively avoid that and similar circumstances, right? I put my hand on a hot stove, causes pain. If I can't remember that, I'm going to do it again and again and again. And if I am not able to judge the difference between a hot stove and a cold stove, I'm at a terrible disadvantage. We use the word stupid to We label people stupid when they can't learn from their experiences. They do the same painful or incorrect or ineffective thing over and over again and can't use the feedback from their experiences in order to adjust their thinking, their feeling, their speaking, and their behaviors. We label a person ignorant if they have not yet acquired the necessary energy, that is experience, in order to function well in some situation. If you took somebody out of the woods who has never been to a cocktail party in a sophisticated environment and you expected them to act sophisticatedly in this cocktail party where they have no knowledge of etiquette, no knowledge of propriety, we would say, that person's not stupid. They're not stupid. They're ignorant. They don't know the rules. They don't know how to play the game. They don't know what's expected. They don't know how people normally behave in those circumstances. You and I will do amazing things to try to avoid being stupid or ignorant, because those two conditions can lead to energy loss, pain, suffering, and even death. So being criticized is an indication that we were potentially either stupid or ignorant. I don't want to be embarrassed. I don't want to be humiliated. I don't want to be made fun of. I don't want to be ridiculed. And all kinds of things like that. There have to be various ways to describe the negative effects of energy exchange experiences. And if I thought in terms of just describing them physically, I could say, well, at least we would put on the spectrum, a horizontal line, hurt somewhere, pain somewhere, agony somewhere. Ooh, agony is, that's pretty intense, and so on. But if we would try to understand this more, I would think we would have to create images to help bring these effects into our awareness. If we can put images in it, it makes it easier for us to process, easier for us to understand, easier for us to correct and heal. Over the years, and even today, I like to use word pictures to describe certain things. So if I wanted to describe energy exchange experiences that are potentially painful, I have used these words: heart splinters, splinters, needles, cactus spikes, arrows, spears, bullets, bruises, knives, cuts, hammers, bludgeons, sledgehammers, icicles, etc. All of those things describe energy exchange experiences or negative energy patterns that may have penetrated our energy fields and caused us to feel diminished by loss of energy, overwhelmed, or dominated. It is these experiences of energy exchanges that need to be healed so that we can regain the lost energy, we can heal the wound where we may be losing energy on a regular basis, and reduce our tendency to anticipate future attacks. And in an effort to protect ourselves, we take positions of rejection and resistance, much to our own personal harm. Environmental signals are largely a five senses involved experience, as I was saying earlier, and that we translate those things into pain or pleasure on a spectrum now of varying intensity. So if pain was on the left-hand side of the midpoint, and pleasure was on the right-hand side of the midpoint, we could say, wow, there are a lot of variations. Yeah, there are. In hospitals and medical treatment, you're already familiar with this idea that a scale ranging, describing pain, ranging from less severe to most severe, is used to help patients communicate, understand, and communicate to medical people the degree of pain and the type of pain, and also helps the medical personnel to understand what exactly is being experienced by the patient and to be able to then respond appropriately. When we consider human life, to me, there are a lot of ways to describe it, energy exchange experiences. But I like this as well. The idea that people manage four things, matter, solid, dense objects and materials. I'm looking at computers and phones and papers and desks and speakers and windows and doors and a puppy dog and so on. We manage energy, less dense, perhaps even invisible forms of energy like thoughts, feelings, words not yet spoken, words spoken, can't see them, and so on. Ideas, concepts. We manage space, the areas or the environments that we inhabit, such as our office space, our desk space, our hard drive space, our closet space, home, all kinds of area, to include the energy field around us. That's our space. Give me some space. Don't stand so close. We're familiar with that as a concept. And then the fourth thing is time. So we manage matter, energy, space, and time. And time, even though lots of us will talk about it in a lot of different ways, time is a concept of measuring change. And we use it and label it a lot of different words. Fast, slow. We can also judge it. I don't have enough time, or I have too much time on my hands. Those kind of ideas. We exchange energy with all four of these forms continually, every day, all day long. I was holding a pen, matter, and I was about to write a word. Before I wrote it, it was energy. And then when I can see the word on a piece of paper, it's matter. I have my feet on the floor. I have my butt sitting in a chair. I have my other hand holding down the paper. And I'm writing. And you just imagine, there is a tremendous amount of energy exchange. Floor, seat, pen, paper. And energetically. And I'm feeling good about it. All kinds of energy is just being exchanged in that simple activity of writing a word or a sentence. As I indicated, I played a lot of baseball when I was young, and it was common to play catch to get warmed up before games or even before practice. So, back in those days, only boys played Little League baseball. We weren't evolved enough to allow girls to participate. So, kids would play catch. So what we would do is take a ball, we'd have a glove on one hand and bare hand on the other, and we'd toss the ball back and forth. We would exchange energy with one another, and the energy we were exchanging was not only our attention, which we put on the other kid, and then we would throw this particle of energy, this matter, this chunk of matter called a baseball, with the other kids, and it'd go back and forth, back and forth. Part of the game, and even in practice, we would hit a ball with a bat. We were exchanging our energy using the bat as a medium and exchanging our energy and putting it into the ball. Depending on how effectively we did that was how hard and fast and far that ball traveled. And if you could hit it hard enough, fast enough, far enough, it could go over the fence. No matter where you were trying to hit it where nobody else was standing. So we're trying to manage the matter of that baseball using a bat and hit it where people were not standing. That's a game. Sometimes in certain games, we're trying to get the ball or matter in certain places. I get it. But in baseball, kids occasionally got hit with a ball, or even worse, got hit with a bat. You can imagine those could be painful energy exchange experiences. During those years and later, I have seen and heard unkind parents scream at their children during the Little League baseball games. Sound is an energy form that can hurt when it is exchanged with people. Insults, verbal abuse, humiliation, sarcasm, and so on, are energy exchange experiences that are typically intended to be painful to the recipient, either to be like a cattle prod to get them to start doing something or stop doing something. And in other cases, when the parent was saying stuff about the opposing team, those insults, those energy patterns, those energy forms were designed to diminish, make less, make those kids less effective, make them more self-conscious so they would fail at playing baseball games. Even looks and stares can be painful to people. You know, when you get the umpire called a bad pitch, well, that ball was outside. You called it a strike, you turn around and give him the death stare, hoping that he stopped doing that kind of thing, not giving you what you wanted. We already know that the energy exchanged through the eyes can be extremely powerful, extremely validating, extremely kind and respectful when we look at somebody and make eye contact with them and be safe as we do it. Or we also know that those kind of looks have the potential to be negative, scary, harmful. In life, we manage space, or at least we try to. Just think of this. In childbirth, space for the child is very limited. For women who have had children, you probably get that. But as a child being born, you should get that as well. Having space and having territory is really important to human beings, and actually it's important to other species as well. Human beings do amazing things, not necessarily good ones, to defend our space and to expand our space. Think of the word war. War. If you've ever seen a person experience claustrophobia, and I have, in elevators or tight spaces or in airplanes, you know that the fear of losing space or the fear of being confined in a space can be terrifying to people. Have you ever seen anybody who is afraid of heights? Makes me wonder, is this fear based upon too much space and too little support structure? I think so. In this case, the amount of space is perceived as being dangerously unmanageable. Too much space. I can't deal with that. Too much space, too little space. As long as we feel we can't manage it, we got a problem. The concept of time is interesting. No one really knows what it is, except we have a lot of opinions and feelings about it, right? People will debate whether it's linear or circular or something else, parallel or whatever. Time is a convenience for people. If you and I are going to rendezvous, when are we going to... When? Oh, let's just settle on the time. Okay, 2 p.m. on this date. That's convenient as compared to let's rendezvous. Adding the element of time really is a handy thing. So time has to do with the rate of change. And we've all had this experience. Time flies when you're having fun. And you're like, wow, I was involved in doing something. I was in the zone. I spent 4 hours. And then I looked up, 4 hours? Wow, that's not possible. And maybe we have the experience of just the reverse, where time is going very slowly. Why? We might have been bored, or we were being restrained, or we had to do something in one form or another against our will, or we were being tortured metaphorically or in actuality, then time drags on and on. We say, time, that might be relative. I had a client who felt and said, time is my enemy. I battle time every day, all day. Upon questioning, Bill said, he had been born prematurely at home without a doctor in attendance because there was not enough time to get to the hospital and there was not enough time for the doctor to get to the house to deliver him. This client was a doctor. Until recently, it hadn't ever occurred to me that the possibility was he became a doctor so the doctor he didn't have at birth could now always be available to him. If he was a doctor, he always had the doctor. Never had to worry about the doctor not being available. There's not enough time to get to the doctor. Oh, yes, there is. I'm the doctor. Oh. And I certainly understood that his belief there was not enough time was pulled out, was derived from his birth circumstances. Worse yet, he was causing himself so much stress with this belief that he developed cancer. And he was convinced that stress was killing him. And this is what he used to say to himself repeatedly, day after day after day. This stress is killing me. Not having enough time to do everything is killing me. That is not a good mantra, folks. You don't want to have that. But he did. And he used it repeatedly on himself. Talk about stabbing yourself with an energy pattern that is going to harm you. That's what he was doing. If everything in life is a facet of our relationships with matter, energy, space, and time, and frankly, I don't know what else there is to manage other than and have relationships with other than those four things, we can say our present-day reactions and responses to environmental signals are probably related to matter, energy, space, and time, and are based upon our previous experiences and the beliefs we created out of these experiences trying to manage matter, energy, space, and time. As the ego expresses through the personality and through its four driving needs, and frankly, I think this information from Christ Returns reveals startling truth, is so important, so valuable, so actionable that people need to know it. But the need to defend ourselves from criticism, emotional, and physical attack are how we will tend to react and shows up in our fear of environmental signals. When we consider that environmental signals or the environments that we walk into or consider walking into have the potential to criticize us or emotionally or physically attack us, we're going to be on high alert. Frankly, it is this tendency to fear criticism and emotional and physical attack that hinder our flourishing in our own lives. We have to hold back. We have to protect ourselves. When we imagine and anticipate attack on any level, we stop building, creating, or the life that we want, and we start defending what we have and closing off to be safe. That self-protect mode that Bruce Lipton talks about, that self-protect mode long-term is a death sentence. And it preceded by unhappiness, conflict, illness, and we don't need to go there. Regarding the second driving need, that is to finish first in the race of life, when we've had painful experiences of ineffectiveness that we translate into inevitability, oh, I'm going to fail. And we've had those experiences of ineffectiveness. You know, the time you came home with a 99 or a 95 and got yelled at because you weren't perfect, or the time you didn't always get the highest marks in the grade, or you didn't finish the foot race ahead of everybody else, or you didn't do this better than everybody else, and you didn't have more than everybody else. If we translated that into, oh boy, I can't succeed. It's inevitable that I'm going to fail. There's going to be pain. We're going to avoid those challenges. We're not going to participate. Instead of embracing those events instead of having the understanding, oh, they'll cause me to grow. I'll gain value of this as I continue to strive to deal with this obstacle or solve this problem or overcome this resistance. I'm going to build my strength. I'm going to build my awareness. I'm going to get smarter. I'm going to get more experience. And I'm going to get skills. I'm going to get a more empowered identity. Not likely that stuff is coming out of the average kid. More likely, I'm not going to engage. I'm not going to participate. I don't want to play. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to join that. That's a problem. It has become obvious to me recently that a person who can't produce desirable results for himself or herself due to, on some deep level, a resistance or an unwillingness to fully commit themselves to an effort will instead cop an attitude. They will cop an attitude. And this attitude is, in fact, the use of an energetic field to create the facade, the impression that this person, I'm right, I'm effective, I'm safe, I'm powerful, I'm strong, I'm cool, I'm... However, using an attitude like this is driven by fear. Driven by fear, not confidence, and not a feeling of effectiveness. The third and fourth driving needs are to take the best for self and keep control of those things despite the opposition of everybody else. So the things we've acquired, such as status, money, wealth, property, friends, power, family, influence, and so on, we will do amazing things to hold on to that. If we've had previous experiences of pain due to failure trying to fulfill those needs, we couldn't take the best for ourselves, we couldn't hold on to what we had, somebody else took it away from us, somebody overwhelmed or dominated us in various circumstances, we can create the habit of anticipating failure. And again, we can stop trying at all, which can result in, say, covert hostility, because that energy has got to go somewhere, or withdrawal, and we hold on to it to the point of being depressed. But let's go back to the first driving need, the need to defend self from criticism, emotional, and physical attack. I think this is the most important area to consider if we're looking for the cause of our current fears of environmental signals. And it is in the area that, when we heal it, will provide the greatest relief, the greatest return of freedom, and it'll open the doorway so we can explore and express our fullest potential. You've heard this expression? He has a thick skin or a thin skin, or she has a thick skin or a thin skin. Those statements actually refer to sensitivity to environmental signals. Undoubtedly, our skins were really thin from conception on up to 14 or 16 years old. Those skins that we're talking about are the boundaries of our identity. They're that outer border. And so that means, if our prenatal environments, our birth environment, and our home environments were filled with criticism, emotional and physical attacks, anger, rejection, hopelessness, despair, worry, fear, even if they were not directed at us, if we were submerged in them, those vibrations would have entered us. They would have penetrated our consciousness. They would have become part of our energetic identity. Now, we're never going to know all the information we processed during those years. Why? Because if the human conscious mind can only process about 4,000 bits of information per second, while the subconscious mind processes 4 billion bits of information per second, consciously, we can't match the subconscious. So everything else that we've processed is way too much for us to know consciously. But you know what we can do? We can review whose criticism cut the most deeply, hurt us the most, was acutely painful, whose emotional and physical presence we feared the most, whose behaviors made us the most self-consciousness, and who dented our sense of who we were. And when we stepped out of the house, I was only just talking about our family of origin in the home, but when we stepped out of our house in our early years and went to school or preschool, the environmental signals that came to us that originated from teachers or other authority figures, or even maybe more significantly from the other little kids, our peers, we know children can be mean and cruel, as well as being not very skilled at expressing themselves. Those were the days when boys did rude and crude things as attempts to show girls that they liked the girl, like cavemen trying to express affection, pulling a hair and teasing and taunting and doing other things that were not really appreciated. But children and adults not knowing how to express affection or other means to ensure the well-being of children can lead children to take responsibility for problems that they did not cause, that they have no right to take responsibility for. Pretty easy for children to understand that they didn't cause a rainy thunderstorm outside. But when they see volatility or emotional malfunctioning or thunders and lightning in the house, in their family of origin, it is pretty easy to think that it's something they didn't do, or something they did wrong, or something they should have done, and to take blame for it. When we're able to heal the previously internalized criticism by recognizing that we weren't the source of it, we were merely standing near someone who was so overloaded with stress that they were explosive. They were like a thunderstorm inside the home or inside the school or inside the building or out on a playground, that they were so overwhelmed and incapable of processing these environmental signals, they erupted like a thunderstorm with thunder, with lightning, and they struck out. And if we were the lightning rod nearby, we got hit and hurt by it. But we can develop our ability to redefine criticism, the criticism that we experienced, so it's not about our identity, but it was really about the identity of that person who was doing the criticizing at that moment. We don't need to criticize the criticizer. We need to understand with compassion, the pain of their stresses, reduce them, reduce their options, reduce their choices, and very limited choices are available to somebody who is overwhelmed by stress. It really does reduce people down to a primitive level. You and I, we can heal our experiences so we can have a full array of choices, unlike somebody under tremendous stress. If we can have a full array of choices with regard to our thinking, feeling, speaking, and actions, we can make the environmental signals coming from us be as kind, as considerate, as loving, and as respectful as we want. That's the environment we want to be in, and that's the environment we can sow the seeds of. And when we understand we have that possibility, it's not so much environmental signals that are incoming, it's outgoing. We reap what we sow, so it is our sowing that is so significant here. We can reduce the fear of the environmental signals in our dealings with other people. We can make it safe for them. And as we do that, our own fear of environmental signals will decrease. And as we increase our capacity to create and manage the environmental signals that we express, we can become more and more effective. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. Imagine those are the environmental signals you are looking for. Those are the ones that you want to receive. That couple of sentences, that's what you're looking for. That's what you put your attention on. That's what you draw to you. That's the awareness that you want. Here's the third line. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know that you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal, loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.